employers need to be looking at how can we create a space where people are in their window of tolerance at the most amount of time, most of the time. And so that's kind of where I'm trying to create awareness, like give leaders and businesses tools and frameworks and strategies to create an environment where people are in their window of tolerance more. Because if they're in their window of tolerance more, they're going to be more productive. You're going to be able to have, they're going to be more creative and resourceful and innovative.
To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourselves and the relationship with others, finding our stability in our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships. We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships. I want to introduce you all to Amy Smith, the heart and soul behind Kindred, Consulting with Purpose. Kindred is all about equipping leaders with the tools they need to create trauma-informed, mentally healthy workplaces. Amy worked for about 9 years with not-for-profits as a social worker, working with people seeking asylum, refugees, and in suicide prevention and mental health before starting her own business. Kindred began because Amy was frustrated at the disconnect between trauma-informed care frontline workers were expected to provide to others and the tangible support offered to those very same staff on a daily basis. Amy's commitment to dismantling oppressive systems isn't just a job, it's a lifestyle. She's a continual learner, always seeking wisdom from mentors and leaders to grow in her practice and knowledge.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. I'm sitting with Amy. So nice to have you, Amy.
Thanks, Jackson. Hi, everyone. I'm Amy. I'm coming from Gadigal land today.
Yeah, I'm in Cammeraygal land today, generally where I sit and live.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. What has brought you here today? Let's get straight into it, Amy. Who the hell are you and what do you do?
Who am I? I'm lots of facets. I've had a conversation with someone the other day. I love that you said, who are you rather than what do you do first?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because who I am isn't what I do.
Good.
I'm a mum. I'm a runner. I love music. I'm a musician. And I'm a social worker and a social justice advocate. And what I do in all of that at the moment is I run a business called Kindred Consulting, and we work with businesses and leaders to create mentally healthy workplaces, communities, programs.
Beautiful. Nice.
Is that my elevator pitch?
Nice little nutshell, which will crack open, I guess, and pull apart. We can go so many different directions today, and I guess why I got you here, because I was really intrigued by the work that you do, and I guess a lot of people listening to this podcast are all walks of life, but generally most of them will have work and work in spaces, whether it be for themselves or organizations, or anywhere where they have a culture and they have different levels of structure put in place to support them in their mental health and I guess in what that can kind of look like. So where do you come in? Is there a starting point, or is it kind of anywhere on this, like the big circle, and you can just join at any point? Like what kind of, when does someone go, holy shit, we need Kindred?
I think that can differ. Most workplaces or most business owners think about it after an incident or after there's something that's happened.
Yeah.
And that highlights the need for more support or resources for their staff. Mm. But at the same time, I've just finished off a project with a business who the owner is already doing an amazing job to look after her staff, but she wants to do better.
Okay.
And she just doesn't know how. And so we did a workplace mental health and wellbeing review with her staff. And so that's better in the sense that because if I come in when you've just had a crisis, you're kind of in survival mode as a business.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't recommend putting in changes, even if they're good changes, when you've got a team that has just gone through a big, like, significant stress or a significant trauma, essentially.
Yeah.
So you're more playing caretaker mode in that space. Like, you can't implement different strategies and different recommendations when people are already feeling heightened and feeling stressed out.
Mm. Yeah.
So well, yeah. I would say most of the time that's when people think about mental health. But you want to be, you want to implement things when people are actually feeling pretty good.
Yeah. So preventative in an ideal world where it's kind of like putting things in place before people start to struggle.
Yeah. And before, before different things. And some of it's environmental. So it might be external factors. For instance, like the pandemic was a huge external factor that impacted on all workplaces. And you can see the organizations that adapted really well and that responded and supported their staff well,
yeah,
because they had infrastructure and because they had systems and frameworks and things in place for when significant things happen. Whereas the ones that floundered, the ones that had, and I mean, look at their healthcare system. They had so much pressure, and the fallout of that we're still seeing today, and the rates of burnout and people leaving that industry because they weren't resourced, they weren't supported in a time that they really needed to be.
So there's still a ripple effect of some of that pandemic as well, I guess, where people are getting asked to come back to work, you know, face-to-face rather than working from home, and they know there's a lot of pushback and stuff there. But yeah, it's had a massive rehaul. We have to think about things differently, and I think the worker themselves or the employee has gotten more of a voice since the pandemic, because they're not just this, you know, cog in the machine, I guess. Would you agree with that? Like, there's been more like eyes on.
Yeah, I think I read an article, someone I know, Shane Hatton, he wrote an article around the balance between wanting workers to come back into the office and then people wanting to work from home. And you can run into this thing around compliance, like people might come back into the office, but they don't really want to be there. And that, and having a compliance culture is not a healthy culture. And so it's more about, with that topic, looking at it from, well, what is it, what's in it for, why should they come to the office? Like, what's the difference? Is it that you don't trust them? Because a lot of it is around, we like productivity, and wanting to make sure people get their jobs done and things. And so that comes down to trust. And if you don't trust your workers, that's the issue, not them being in the office.
Yeah.
And so it's looking at, well, what's the core reason you want them to come into the office? And it can't just be for you as a leader or as a business owner because you want them to. It needs to be, well, what's in it for them?
Yeah.
And you need to come to something that works for everyone, which is really nuanced and is really difficult to do. But I think most business owners or leaders come from it like, well, no, you have to because I said so, essentially. Yeah,
the way.
It doesn't work with kids, and it doesn't work with adults.
Yeah, no, we're all just big kids anyway. So tell me, what you got the mental health, what did you call it? Mental health and wellbeing assessment? What are some of the main things
up? A review.
What are the main
things? So as we've talked about before, so I'm a social worker. I come from working in the not-for-profit sector for almost 10 years. And very much using a trauma-informed approach in my practice and in my care to community and to clients. And what the frustration was, and I'll say, like, people don't leave, like mental health workers or social workers, they don't leave places or get burnt out because of the work we do with clients. We get burnt out because of the systems and because of the lack of support within our organizations. And so seeing that and experiencing that, the impact of that, I then, I guess, started on a thing of like, well, why are we not integrating this trauma-informed approach in the way we run our organizations, in the way we structure our systems? And that, you know, I guess my dream would be that, like, our government policies and all of that integrates that.
Yeah.
But starting small. What can I do with the experience and the education and the knowledge that I have to support workplaces to start to integrate that trauma-informed approach? And I really believe that is something that's beneficial for all industries, not just in mental health and community spaces. Like, I've done reviews with a fit, like in the fitness industry, for an audiology clinic. Like, I'm talking to someone about a construction at the moment. It's really relevant. Anyone that works with humans, it's relevant to start to think about those things and be aware of those things. And so I use that approach with the review. So I look at things like, what does safety look like in your workplace? Not just from a physical standpoint, but from an emotional standpoint and a psychosocial standpoint.
Yeah.
And we get that information from staff. So for this to work, you have to have leadership buy-in. And leadership have to be willing to hold a mirror up to themselves, essentially. So I'm really, and I reiterate this when I'm working with business owners, it is really brave to take on this process, because you're essentially allowing your staff to have a space to be really open and honest about how mentally healthy they perceive the workplace to be.
And then
from there, I work with them to then come up with solutions and ideas and recommendations of what could be better and how to make it better. So it's not just about identifying the growth areas, but also, like, and this is how we could improve it.
Yeah. And that takes some, I mean, it takes the best leaders, right? It takes the best leaders to be able to kind of say, like, one, here's where I struggle, and here's where I notice I struggle in help supporting my staff. And then here's what I can see, and I can stand up and call out the system that I'm a part of from the top.
And it's also what I found the feedback from the process has been, because I work quite closely with staff and we do focus group sessions and things like that, they feel a sense of ownership around creating a mentally healthy workplace. And sometimes, like, I've had one business, before I'd even finished the report to give to management, the staff are like, oh, from the focus group sessions, we've already gone to management and asked to do this, this, and this, and we're already starting to do it. Like, they didn't wait for the report. They just started doing it. And so, so it's giving that sense of responsibility to staff as well, but not in a way of, like, blaming them and expecting them to do it, but them in, like, giving them a voice, really. And space to be heard. And like empowering, and where they can access empowerment. We can't empower people, but
So, like, this opportunity to have a conversation that then starts this ability to then spread, you know, implementation and integrating. But if you're not talking about it, nothing's
happening. Yeah. And it's, and I think because of my social work background, I'm able to facilitate those groups in a way that creates, like, people can access that safety and access that ability to, like, speak up and be heard and things. So, because I know, you know, reviews, like staff evaluation things, that's not a new thing. There's so many organizations and software companies and HR companies that offer that. I think the point of difference for Kindred is the way I do it is I integrate that trauma-informed, those principles into the questions. And then I facilitate the focus groups using my social work skills. And that's something that is so beneficial in this space that I didn't even realize I was going in, stepping into the kind of the HR world when I started this. But because I'm just looking at it from a that social work trauma lens, I'm like, oh no, actually, it's stepping into
So what you're saying is all HR should be social workers. They do a lot more,
essentially. Lot more good
with managing.
Sorry people. If you're in HR and you're listening. It's just a different. I think it's a skill set that potentially isn't seen as like a HR skill set, but I can see a lot of benefits to having that education and that lens in the HR space.
So what I'm really interested in, what I was kind of thinking about before, is you work and came from this social work space to then see what was going on and get this idea of Kindred and how you can create change and all the things you kind of said before. I've worked in a lot of, you know, non-for-profit, government, private sectors, and even as a counselor, you know, social worker or psychologist, those environments can still be so dysfunctional. And even though they've got things set up, there's still like a lot of toxicity or, you know, a need for change in the culture. So what I kind of think is, like, if that's happening in places where there's people in the profession that are literally trained to do and be better than that, what hope is there for the other organizations that don't have those skills or kind of mind frames or frameworks?
Yeah, and that was the catalyst for why I'm here, because I worked in mental health and saw the mental health sector is probably one of the worst when it comes to workplace well-being. And like you just said, if they can't get it right, what hope is there? And I think that comes from we need to really shift how we think of business. We need to shift what does good business processes look like? What does change management look like? Because I think, and again, like, the business world is new to me, I'm not going to lie. Like you have come from working in community development and casework and advocacy and in not-for-profit spaces. So I'm learning more about it. And the more I learn about it, like, in those sectors, we're applying business models that, one, aren't human-centered, not trauma-informed, but we're also expecting the workers to work from a client-centered, trauma-informed approach. But those systems aren't set up that way.
Yeah.
And so really I'm just bringing, and this in the States, there's a lot more around this. There's a few different peak bodies in this space that have given like frameworks and like, how do you apply it? And so I take that research and knowledge and apply it here.
Yeah.
And adapt it. But essentially it's we know this, and I'm working with a mental health organization at the moment supporting their leadership team. And it's so great when the light bulb moments that happen, because they do know it. they know what trauma-informed care looks like. They do it every day. And so it's really just getting them to take that and apply it in a different way, apply it in their leadership and apply it in the way that they support their staff.
Mm-hmm.
And also looking, and you probably in your work as a therapist, what's really interesting in that sector, most people who go into social work or counselling or any of those roles, we are very much other focused, people pleasers, don't consider our own needs or our own selves. Mm-hmm. And I feel like organisations capitalise on that or take advantage of that. That's why we're not paid well.
Mm-hmm.
And we go over and above for others, and we don't really pause and like reflect on, oh, how am I going? Because we're too busy worried about everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Until we burn out, and until it's we're at crisis mode and we can't work in the industry anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's where, I'm trying to create, support organisations so that cycle stops happening.
Yeah, okay. Big job.
Yeah.
I was saying you've also got this idea where there's not just people pleasers and caretakers and people that are kind of in these professions like mental health, is that there's always the yes man or yes girl in organizations where they're still kind of taking advantage of them. It's like, it's all good. Amy's going to stay back late. Amy always gets it done. Amy's going to take on the extra work. So businesses rely on those people, in my experience and opinion.
And we reward that. So people who work back late and go over and above, it's rewarded. And in the corporate space, you get promoted if you model those behaviors. But then, and that's where we need to start to shift, what does a good worker actually look like? Because if it's someone staying back late, not having a balance, not being present at home with their family, but they're married to their job, what kind of society are we building if that's what we're rewarding?
Yeah.
I saw a quote the other day. It's like healthy people equals healthy profits. And that's what we need to be working towards. We need to be seeing that investing in people and in our people, in our workplaces, so that they're healthy, actually means that we're going to have a healthy, more sustainable business. Mm. And the return of investment is going to be seen. But it's, I think what can happen is people see business owners and things I've got to spend money on work, on employee well-being, and they see it as a deficit.
Yeah.
And it's a cost to the business to do, and it's them being nice to their staff by doing it, and it's a nice add-on to have. We do yoga on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And my challenge to that, I'm not against yoga on a Wednesday. That's fine.
Right.
But what are you doing to, in the day-to-day, what's the workload like? When staff show up to work, how are they feeling? How's their nervous system? And that's really hard to quantify, and that's really hard to evaluate when you don't have the skills, because they're not mental health workers. Mm. They're a construction company or something like that. So, but that stuff is what makes us human, and it affects us all. And so why not tap into that a little bit and to create? I did a podcast recently. I think employers need to be looking at how can we create a space where people are in their window of tolerance at the most amount of time, most of the time.
Yeah.
And, looking at that's kind of where I'm trying to create awareness, give leaders and businesses tools and frameworks and strategies to create an environment where people are in their window of tolerance more. Because if they're in their window of tolerance more, they're going to be more productive. You're going to be able to have, they're going to be more creative and resourceful and innovative. So that's, I guess, I don't know if that answered your question, but that's where that whole like social work. Trauma-informed lens comes into that workplace, wellbeing, mental health space.
So there's obviously a lot of psychoeducation that comes in to, you know, upskill the or just get the knowledge around window of tolerance, so people staying regulated in their bodies and people being able to be in environments where they feel safe and comfortable and calm. And then it's about kind of giving them resources and exercises or strategies, mechanisms to kind of implement within their teams. But like in the if the overall goal is to create a healthy society or healthy business or healthy people working for the business, you said like a mental health, a well-run like mental health experience in the workplace, like is there like how do you measure it? What how do you know? Like what's a way to kind of say this is a mentally healthy this is a mentally healthy organization.
I guess that's why I start with a review, because that gives you a baseline. So if we do a review to see where are things at now, and then from that review and you have your recommendations, then we do the same survey or the same process like 1 year later. So and I think that that's the thing, is it's not a tick box exercise. That's a big one. Like you can't tick 10 boxes and like, oh, we're a mentally healthy workplace, done deal, happy days. It's a process, not a destination. And it's a continuous learning, because you're going to have different staff, different environmental factors. Like there's so many things. So it's actually about having an ongoing commitment to this is something that's a priority for us, and that we're continuously working on and continuing to respond to.
Okay. That makes sense. So it's got to be something that's just as important as the other values or pillars within their organization. And that's something that's like an effort of commitment to, you know, well-being as a domain of function, you know, in our organizations. Because it's all well and good to have that structure in place, but it takes everyone together to be able to do it and show up.
So it's a whole of organization approach. You need leadership buy-in to start. It doesn't work if you don't have executive leadership driving it.
Yeah.
I think it's really, it's limited. It can still have benefit, but it's limited in its influence across a whole organization if you don't have executive level who are driving it, or at least championing it from happening. And, but then it needs to be like across the whole organization. So like all staff need to, I guess, be trained or in inductions, like this is a priority in our workplace. This is what it looks like. This is how we implement it in the day to day. This is the process we have if there's anything that you want to raise. And I think the thing around emotional safety is a key component of leadership. And that's not just about asking, oh, what, like, how are you going, or what can we do to support you? That's a really good question to ask. But if you don't have emotional safety within that relationship, employer-employee relationship, you're not going to get an honest response.
Right.
And so what are you doing as a leader to create emotional safety with your workers and with your staff?
Well, you tell me. What is something that they can do? Like, I mean, it's such a big concept, emotional safety. It takes years to build that sometimes in therapy with some people. But what does that kind of look like? Or what is something that they can implement to kind of create some of that in like a, I don't know, surface level way of describing it? Obviously, it can be pretty complex. But
Yeah.
Where do we start?
I think, yeah, I guess I really love, I mean, a good book to read around that is Brené Brown's book, Dare to Lead.
Sure.
And great. She talks a lot about vulnerability, having vulnerability in leadership. And there's so much gold in that book. That for any sector around how do you lead with vulnerability, because leading with vulnerability creates emotional safety or creates an environment for people to access emotional safety.
Yeah.
And that's something that in my work with it, whether I'm doing supervision, one-on-one group supervision, or working with a whole organization, I never claim to be a safe space because I can't assume safety for other people.
Yeah.
And I can't, so I'm really, I don't, even with organizations who say that they're a safe, inclusive work environment, my challenge to that is for who?
Yeah.
Is it because the executives have said, yeah, we're doing X, Y, Z, and so we're safe? Like, you can't assume that you're safe for every single individual that works in your organization. Unless you ask every single individual. I guess that's the biggest thing, is not assuming that you're safe for everyone and having an awareness that, and creating spaces and opportunity for people to be open and honest about how things are in the workplace. And I guess that from a leadership perspective, modeling that from the start, so when someone first starts, how are you creating an approachable and open relationship with your staff?
So immediately starting to think about how I want to form a relationship with my teams, and how do I create a sense of vulnerability that allows connection and openness from my end, so that it's welcoming them to be able to come forward, and then build from there.
And it's modeling that. You can't expect someone to be open with you if you're not open with them. Yeah, because you also don't, I think it's that fine line, and Brené talks about this in the book, vulnerability isn't about treating your staff as your therapist and telling them about all your relationship problems and all that. But it's about, an example might be, say there's like a big change happening in the organization and there's a lot of uncertainty. There's, you know, everyone's still working out how it's going to work. And as a leader, saying to your staff, this is really tough and I know that there's a lot of uncertainty, but we're going to work together and I'm with you and we're going to get through this together.
Yeah.
And I will give you as much information as I can as I receive it as well. I want you to know that my door is always open. And if you need to vent, if you just need space to listen, or if you want some guidance, I'm here. You know, that's like, could be a way to show openness. You're acknowledging that it's hard. I think what happens, leaders can be like, particularly when it comes to change in a workplace, you have to be positive and like, oh, how great is this? Like, yay, happy days. You can't say anything negative about anything. Whereas actually it's okay to acknowledge, no, this is a bit tough and I'm not really sure on all the answers. I don't know all the answers. I think that's okay as a leader to say that. But not in a way that's deflecting to your staff to find the answers, but saying, hey, I don't know it all, but let's work this out together and I'm here to support you.
Yeah. So what I hear, the key difference is this, like working together, like everything you just shared sounds so nice and calm and healthy. such an ideal. It's so different to just like, we've just got to get over this tough part. You need to suck it up for now. for things to get better, or, you know, it's the only positive view, like, no, 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 everything's all good, we're smiling and happy. You know, I think both just are passive in their thing, and it's not authentic either. It's kind of like, well, we're shutting doors rather than opening them.
And I really believe if we had that approach more in the business world or with our teams, you would see such a shift when it comes to workplace, like stress, workers' comp, burnout, all of those things. Like I don't know about you, but I know when I've had managers who have modeled that, the work hasn't changed, but my experience at work is so much better, and I'm able to work. I'm able actually to take on more because I feel supported, and I am in a genuine, authentic way, rather than on my own or in a like token tick box way.
Yeah. So obviously leaders listening to this sort of thing, we need to grab on and sort of implement mental health change and being able to get those reviews in place. And there's some that are doing that, and there's some that are already set up. But I mean, even just the reminder that we need to always come back to it, because there's beautiful models that are there, but we slack off and not implementing them as we used to. But I guess for those that aren't in that space, or there's no budget for it, or there's not a priority, or the care's not there, even though it would create so much difference and reduce stress. So what can the employee do? How does employees start some of those conversations? Because like, if you're approaching someone, there's got to be that daring nature when it's vulnerable and it might not be left on, you know, deaf ears sort of thing. So how does someone kind of advocate from the bottom up?
Honestly, that's a really, it's tough to do. Yeah. I guess I would be, if you've got a relationship with your manager, starting to have the conversation in a gentle way, sharing resources. So there's a lot of resources. So, you know, I have actually a couple of my projects have come from staff going to leadership being like, hey, we think we want to do this. And, you know, so there's been that entry, you know, they've introduced me to the leadership, and then I've been able to kind of run the conversation and share some of like our like Kindred's approach to things and stuff like that. So, but there's been an openness there.
Yeah.
But I guess I've seen it. It kind of comes in the people power. So if you can do some advocacy and get more people in the, like on staff, really driving it and really like, hey, we want this rather than just you as an individual.
Yeah. Okay.
And be clear about why you want it and why it's important. And Black Dog Institute, they've got some really great research around why it's beneficial and the return of investment and things like that. I think that's the thing. But it's at the same time, I'm really mindful if you're in a really toxic work environment, the number one priority is your well-being, not changing the system.
The
culture. If it's super toxic, I think it's about really focusing on, okay, what do I need to be well right now? And sometimes that is actually leaving and going somewhere where, yeah, they may not be perfect, but if there's an openness to do better, then you can work with that.
Yeah. I hear. I definitely think that it's a two-pronged approach depending on your own well-being, because I think you said at the very start, Amy, it's like change doesn't happen in crisis, or decision-making shouldn't happen in big traumatic situations, because there's survival mode and it's hard to do too much in that space. So if you're not well yourself and continuously advocating, you're actually going to hurt yourself more, I guess, in some of that space. So it's so important to get your needs met, but there's boundaries and self-reflection or awareness around, well, you know, is it possible to get them met?
Well, and your capacity as well. And I think some people may find, like, if they're in really like high stress or toxic work environments, that they resource themselves outside of work.
Sure.
To be able to be in that space. And I think it's just, you've got to, only you know what your capacity is. So, you know, it's taking time to really reflect on your own well-being and like, okay, can I work in this environment? And maybe it's about, yes, I can, but not like putting a bit of a time frame on it. And making sure you're supported outside of work if that's what you need. So, but yeah, I think it, and particularly like I've come from, yeah, someone said to me once, oh, you're a social worker, you want to change the world. And that's very much can be what we go in after our undergrad, like, I'm going to change the world now. And then you realize that's really hard to do. recognizing what's within, what can I do with the influence I have right now and what's within my capacity, and honoring that, honoring our capacity at the time. And having self-compassion and not expecting ourselves by ourselves to change a whole workplace that's completely toxic. Like, it's actually okay to leave that environment. Yeah. You're not a failure. It's not that you're not good enough. It's not that you're not resilient enough. It's actually about honoring what's happening and honoring your capacity at the time.
I love that. That's so well said. And it's so such an important message that people need reminding of all the time. Because, yeah, you got to be able to put you first despite there's got to be a line. You know, we've got to set limits to be able to know, like, at what point do I speak up? At what point do I bail out? At what point do I advocate for myself? At what point do I need to take a break and get my holidays in? You know, those things have sort of got to be in the forefront. Which is hard to do if we've been stuck in a culture that, you know, has rewarded the opposite, like you said. But ideally, that's what it all kind of comes back to, is how do I reduce my stress and how do I live my life? We spend most of our time at work and then we spend the rest of it asleep. We want them both to be safe places to be.
And I think that's also that's not about being selfish, because
no,
you can do better work and you can serve others better if you start to implement things from that approach, honoring your capacity, honoring your needs, having self-compassion. When we start to practice those things, and I know you speak about this so much in your work, we become more balanced, we become more whole, so we're able to show up better and serve others better than what we could before, when we were being people pleasers and selfless those things. And I've seen that, like, that's for me personally in my own journey, I've seen the way I show up really shift in the last couple of years, and it's been for the better. I've been able to do better than what I was doing before.
And I guess that's what you said. It's because of that honoring, which is so good. Got to be able to practice what you preach in this work too. But, you know, there's always our blind spots too, which is definitely the same for me. I think it's just 100%. Beautiful what the sentiment is, and also the difficulty of doing what you're kind of, you know, setting out to do, and for leaders and organizations to kind of take the risk to do that, and for employees to kind of advocate enough for themselves and get their needs met. But I like this concept of, like, well, honor what you can do, because we can't change the world, and sometimes we can't even change organizations, but we can just do what we have the capacity to do, which I love.
Yeah.
Man, where did the time go? This has been cool. I really want to keep talking about all this stuff because it is super, super important. And I think there's something that's just come to mind, Amy, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, that is happening a lot with a lot of my clients, is that a lot of people have found what they need to do externally and they're doing their non-negotiables in terms of their self-care, yet something's still missing, something's still off. And they're coming in and they're going, I'm doing all the things. And that's where I go, well, check your environment.
Mm.
What's going on with your work?
Mm.
Because if we go, we can do all the good things for ourselves, but then go back and hit that grind and do a terrible hustle of crazy organizational culture and toxicity where we're just entering back into relationship with something that's not working for us. So it doesn't matter how good you can be doing for yourself if those things stay stuck.
That's a tough one because it's very easy to be like, oh, just quit your job and go do something different.
Yeah.
When you've got responsibilities or a family or you got to pay rent and all those things. It's actually a privilege to be able to do that, that not many people have. And I would say something that I found helpful. So I used to work in retail before I was a social worker, and you know, that can feel a bit mundane, or like, oh, you just sell clothes. And what I used to do is try and reframe it and like, no, I actually get to connect with people, and I would make it my purpose in selling clothes was actually about how can I make someone's day a little bit brighter.
Yeah.
And so it was finding purpose in something that, you know, from the world standards maybe seems quite materialistic or not purpose driven in its role. And I talked about this in another podcast, how we need people to do jobs that, you know, traditionally in society we don't really value. Like, we need people to do, I don't know, be cleaners or different things that maybe seem like, my husband used to have a car detailing business. Like, that can be seen as like, oh, you just clean cars for a living. But he made it his purpose of like, no, yeah, I get to, like, he had so much pride and joy in how he did that. And the customer service and the way he like connected with clients and things like that. So
yeah,
I would encourage you, if you're in a role, and again, like, caveat, if you're in a really toxic, like there's workplace bullying and harassment, this isn't for those situations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you're in a job where you're just not loving it and you're feeling a bit mundane, trying to find moments of purpose or trying to reframe it. Because I would say most jobs, or if you take some time, there's something that you can start to integrate into your day that has purpose.
Yeah. Love that. Thanks, Amy. That's so cool. So where can people find you? How do people kind of hit you up or be able to potentially work with Kindred? Just
on the street.
Yeah, if they find you, they are.
I'm happy to have a chat. I'm on LinkedIn, Amy Smith. There's a few Amy Smiths, but Kindred Consulting is on there as well. Kindred.consulting. Kindred.consulting on Instagram, and I have a website in the making, kindredconsulting.com.au. But awesome. Yeah, always happy to connect with people.
Yeah, well, I'll put all of that up on there. I've loved talking to you. You have such a calm energy, and hopefully that just gets passed through, even just that, as a takeaway for organizations. They could all use a bit of your calm. I feel very calm now talking to you, so I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thanks, Jackson. And yeah, I love what you're doing and how you're supporting people to find their purpose and meaning and have self-compassion. So
yeah, everything touches everything in this world. So it's nice to share that with you as well. All right. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
If you want to find out more about how therapy can help you kick some goals, go check out findreasontherapy.com.au or the Find Reason Therapy Instagram page.